I'm Jay Allison for the Transom Podcast. This week, the third and final feature of interesting podcasts submitted to Transom.org. This one is Love and Radio, produced by Nick Vanderkolk. He says, Love and Radio is somewhere between NPR and a shockumentary special on Fox, and that it's what Ira Glass might make if he showed up to work drunk. Nick selected this episode, Aftermath, as one of his favorites because it demonstrates some of his favorite editing tricks. We hope you'll enjoy Aftermath, produced by Nick Vanderkolk with Laura Quirrell, and that you'll visit Transom.org to talk with them.
Okay. Let's see. Testing. Okay, so just say where, say we're standing in the whatever room and, you know, something like that.
We're standing in warehouse two. We have two warehouses here, and this is the second warehouse.
So, just can you, just tell me the story of how you and your partner, and could you actually not hold, because I can hear it, sorry. And what's your turnover rate like?
Actually, we have a high turnover rate. We're really lucky if we keep an employee for 10 months to a year. We get a lot of people who call us. I mean, call us, email us, looking for jobs, wanting to do this type of work. And when we first train people, my first interview with them is actually to talk them out of even considering this job. If they waver at all, we know for sure that this isn't what they want and this isn't what they're looking for. The hardest part of the job, as I had mentioned earlier, dealing with the families, but it's also very hard on their families too, not knowing when a job was going to come in, but making plans. Christmas dinner, they're sitting down and their phone rings and...
Okay, so can you start by saying something like, "Hi, my name is Tim, and your full name, and I'm the owner of."
Okay. Hi, my name is Tim Reifstek. I'm co-owner of Aftermath Incorporated. I had just graduated college and was living in an apartment. My business partner now, we've been friends since we were in second grade. They came over, we actually had plans of going golf that morning. And across the street from where I lived was a subdivision. There was some other neighbors that were standing out there just talking and so forth. We went outside, we walked across the street, and we just had, you know, asked what happened. And with the discussion, they had said that the kid committed suicide. An officer approached all of us and asked us, do we know of any company that would perform this type of cleanup? We were like, nope. So about 15 more minutes went by. He's still there talking to us and so forth. And me and my business partner were just like, well, if we could, you know, we would help the family if they needed it. And he's like, great. And we were in the house no longer than probably 1 minute, and he was knocking on the door saying, if you could help out the family, that'd be great. So that's how it all started. For the most part, a majority of our jobs are unattended deaths, and that is when someone passes away in their home is undiscovered for a period of time that we've had the longest go out to 2.5 years. So they were in their home for 2.5 years.
Do you know the circumstances of that one?
Yes, it was a crazy job.
So under $30, started out in the medical field. And we're going to go to the phones very quickly because we're almost out of time.
Okay. The daughter of the deceased actually lived there in the home with him for the 2.5 years. What she was doing was collecting his Social Security checks. You could smell the death from the street. As you walk through this house, you actually were walking through a maze of boxes from the QVC channel, because that's all she did. She was watched the QVC channel all day long and just bought stuff.
I honestly feel it. I can't tell you how happy I am to have purchased this item.
And when you looked up at the ceiling, it was nothing but air fresheners dangling from the ceiling, such as in that movie Seven, when you walked in that bedroom. was very similar to that.
Resolutions include working out. Why aren't you working out your face? If your New Year's resolutions are looking younger, why aren't you working out your face? If your New Year's resolutions are just not looking older, why aren't you working out your face?
Roughly half of our jobs are unattended deaths, and about 25% are suicides. And then from there, it kind of breaks out from murders, accidents, home invasions, and just various other things. I mean, we've done them where women have given birth in homes. One of the questions we usually get when people find out what we do is, oh, do you guys have more suicides around Christmas? And actually, no, we have no more suicides around Christmas than we do in the dead of summer. There's no rhyme or reason for when people kill themselves or when various situations happen. The only thing that we know for sure is that in the summertime, just due to the heat and humidity, a body that lays there for a day or two is much more worse than a body that lays in a house for a day or two in the wintertime.
Do you want to have a word like...
Can you just tell me maybe a story of one of the more like unusual scenes that you encountered in, you know, since you started the company?
Yeah, well, the scene that we usually talk about is a job that took place in Schererville, Indiana. It was a person who, it was his best friend. They had been friends for 20 plus years. He and his wife had separated, and they were going through the first stages of a divorce. Well, what ended up happening was his best friend ended up staying with his wife, soon to be ex-wife, and started sleeping with her and moved into the place with her and so forth. So at work, he was constantly getting harassed by the other workers. And at one point, he just broke. He burnt his trailer down. He sent flowers to her work with a condolence of her death. And went over to her house roughly 6 o'clock in the morning and scaled up one condo of this three-story condo unit. He scaled up the outside of it to the porch of one, went in, asked the families where she was staying at and so forth. They knew nothing of her, didn't know her or anything. Here he's standing there. He's got a shotgun on his shoulders. He's got an AR-15 in his hand. He's in full combat outfit. So he goes out the door, goes up to the second floor, knocks on a door where a woman answers the door and she's holding an infant and asks for her name. She's like, no, I think it might be across the hallway, and proceeds to tell her, go into your bathtub, lay down, and don't lift your head up because World War III is going to start. And this lady said she no longer took four steps and she heard pop, 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 pop. And that's him shooting bullet holes through the door, proceeds to kick the door open. His best friend and her were there. They had thought that this was going to come to an end and was prepared for this because he kept his handgun right there by his bed. He jumped up, grabbed the handgun, proceeded down a hallway, got out to an opening. As he was just coming through the door into the living room, he took two shots off, hit the guy in the chest. As he was falling backward, his AR-15 shot and took about probably 6 or 7 bullets, hitting him, knocking him to the ground. Well, for the next 15 minutes, he just antagonized his best friend on the ground as he was in pain and so forth. He proceeded to walk around him, completely shot his arms and his legs off. Down to the point where he lit his privates on fire and then shot his head off. Completely just walked around him, just shooting the AR-15, constantly reloading it. We were out in our hometown in Sterling, Illinois, at one of our best friend's brother's funerals. We were sitting there. We had sent our supervisor and two technicians down there. as we were sitting there and they knew we were going to a funeral, they responded to this job first. And it was one where they called and called, and we just kept hanging our phone up, and we're just looking at each other, just grinding our teeth, going, what could they be calling about? They know we're in this funeral. So finally, we're like, something's got to be wrong. So we get up and we call, and the supervisor's like, I don't know what to do. You guys got to get here. This is the worst scene I've ever walked into. I don't even know where to start. And I can still picture it as I walked through this door. You get up there and this door is closed and you can see the bullet holes through it. And you just push the door open, and when you first step in, it's as though someone had taken a body and stuffed it into a wood chipper and just sprayed it all over this room. This room was approximately 20 feet long by about 15 feet wide, and there wasn't one square inch of that room that didn't have blood or tissue on it.
And where do you start? Like,
you just gotta pick something and start at that point. In this situation, we started by removing large chunks of the body that the coroner didn't take with them. For an instance, I mean, his intestines were dangling all over a stereo equipment. So we went in and we picked up all of that stuff first, removed bad areas of carpet and so forth, and then from there proceeded with the walls, wiping all the loose debris off of the walls because all the walls were going to come down anyways, and kind of just proceeded through the unit in that way.
We've got Tyvek suits on, gloves, a full face respirator, got booties that go over our Tyvek, so we're completely protected.
Over time, you get desensitized with the visual aspect of the job, seeing the bodily fluids and so forth. The part that you really don't ever get over is the family, dealing with the family, having family members ask you to bring back their loved ones. And you're in a room doing a suicide or an unattended death cleanup, and just one room over, you can hear the family going through their grief, just weeping at the top of their lungs. That's the hardest part of this job to deal with. This is actually one of our corporate brochures.
Wait, can you read something from it?
Basically what it is, it just describes who we are and then what to do next, how to contact us, what we all clean up after from suicides and human and animal feces, and homicides, unattended death, accidents, home invasions, filth cleanups, you know.
What is that?
A filth cleanup? That's a situation where some people just don't throw stuff away. It's a recluse. They have a compulsive disorder. Everything has meaning in their life. They can't just separate themselves from it. I mean, when they go to McDonald's and get themselves a meal, the container that meal comes home in, even the paper bag, the napkin that they wipe their mouth off with, it's all kept. Just piled. I mean, we've had situations where their plumbing in their house no longer works, so they use their bathtub as their toilet. And we've come in there, and what they do is they hold on to something like a towel rack, and they'll hold on to that, and they'll just hang their butt over the edge of the tub, and they just continue to do that until a point comes where they no longer can do that, and they go out and they get these bags from grocery stores. They start using those. It's just crazy the type of jobs that we encounter. I mean, we had a situation here in Chicagoland where we actually had 4 40-yard dumpsters that we filled up with 2-liter bottles that were filled up either a quarter of the way, or a lot of them were all the way filled up with human urine. I mean, the only clean spot he had in the entire house was this little area where he had a cot set up that he slept on.
Blood by the kidneys and for the homeostasis of the body.
We've also keep some of our pictures over here.
Okay.
I mean, this is...
Oh, can you say that again? I didn't get that.
This is also where we keep some of our pictures from jobs. Let's see what else. Here, there's your one of your filth cleanups. There's that. That's actually the pictures from the 2 liter bottles. But it's all the 2 liter bottles where he had urinated. I mean, you can see that one's completely yellow.
Urination.
You actually had to walk on these items just to walk around the house. I mean, that's his garage. Here's another suicide. Took place in a basement. Here's a shotgun suicide, and that was in a basement too. But we got just boxes and boxes of pictures here that.
I'm sure people have asked this, but like how? I mean, it just seems like how do you do it? Like it just seem like really calm. Like it just doesn't seem like something.
Well, I've been doing it for roughly 11 years, and. When we first started the company, the one thing that me and Chris agreed on was that if we're going to do this, it's there. We're there to help families. And that's what we know is our end job, is that we're actually the first step in this family's grieving process. We're getting them back to some normalcy, back into their life, so that they can get back into their home or businesses. They can start back their business back up. Since I've started the job, I've had 3 boys. And when I go home and I see them and look in their eyes, I'm like, how could anyone ever hurt a child? And we do a child cleanup where a family member kills a child once a week. And you sit there and you wonder, how could it be that bad? What could draw them to hurt their own child? How could life be that bad that you'd go to that extreme? And we see it every day.
Chinois, et moi, avec ma vie, mon petit schéma, mon mal de tête, mon poids au foie, j'y pense puis j'oublie, c'est la vie, 80 millions d'Indonésiens, et moi, avec ma voiture et mon chien, son canigou quand il aboie, j'y pense puis j'oublie. C'est la vie, 300 ou 400 millions de noirs, et moi, vivais au brunissoir, au sauna pour perdre du poids, j'y pense et puis j'oublie. C'est la vie.
I think I might be editing my voice out, so actually,
That was Aftermath. From the podcast Love and Radio, Nick Vanderkolk produces Love and Radio and had help on that episode from Laura Correll. You can learn more about Nick and his podcast at transom.org. And this podcast was brought to you by Atlantic Public Media in Woods Hole, Massachusetts. We get support from the National Endowment for the Arts and the Ford Foundation. I'm Jay Allison. Join us next time.